TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Elon Musk abandons ship. The coffee clutch with Robert Reich. Former Secretary of Labor Robert Reich says, quote, Trump's tariffs are in turmoil. His big, beautiful bill is buckling. And the muskrat has left his sinking ship. Is this the beginning of the end for Trump 2.0? Heather and I discuss it all on today's Coffee Clutch. End quote. Here's a 27-minute excerpt of Robert Reich's weekly podcast, recorded on May 31st, 2025. He's a professor, author, lawyer, and political commentator, and worked in the administrations of Presidents Ford and Carter, and as Secretary of Labor for President Clinton. His co-host, Heather Lofthaus, is Executive Director of Inequality Media, Civic Action.
And it is the Saturday Coffee Clutch with Heather Lofthaus and yours truly, Robert Reich. And Heather, what are we going to be focusing on today?
Let's discuss Musk leaving, Trump's tariffs.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Elon.
Seems to be in trouble, and so is his big, beautiful bamboozle of a bill.
In fact, I mean, put those three together, we're really at a kind of inflection point. I mean, the people all focus on the first 100 days, but really it is the first 4 months in effect. And Trump is, Elon Musk leaving and all of these tariffs now being held in abeyance by the courts. And this big, beautiful, ugly, horrible bill being really, I think, I doubt it's going to get through, Heather, because the Senate is sitting on it. Senate Republicans don't know what to do. So all of this blitzkrieg, crazy, shock and awe momentum that Trump had initially seems to have stopped, hopefully.
Yes.
And
But is it a turning point or is it an inflection point?
Well, it's a turning point if it turns.
Well, but will it? I mean, I was hopeful this week watching these courts make decisions. I mean, of course, if Musk couldn't be there over 130 days, why didn't we announce that from the beginning?
Well,
I mean, it all seems
exactly.
a bit of a ruse.
I mean, he was on his way out after the Wisconsin Supreme Court disaster for the Republicans. I mean, that, Musk put his money there and said he was behind the Republican candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. When somebody really stakes themselves the way Musk did, it was Trump and Musk, but it was really Musk's money. I think that Musk lost a great deal of political leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump really does want to be in the corner with the richest person in the entire world. And Trump wants the money. He wants to use the possibility of Musk's money to scare Republicans. If you don't play the game, if you're in the Congress and you don't do what I want, I have Elon's money behind me and we can finance a primary opponent for you. So he wants that. He also likes the fact that there are 220 million followers of Elon Musk, and Elon Musk can give Trump an even larger megaphone. And obviously, Musk loves power, and he loves being on the inside. And he didn't want to leave. I mean, it's pretty clear.
No,
that
I don't think so either.
And that press conference yesterday, he kept on talking about, well, this is just the beginning of.
Well, they're friends and
Doge.
Advisors, and I'm a friend and an advisor.
And I've left all my people behind me, all inside, and I have access. He didn't say I have access to all this data, but he did, and he does.
But it felt like, a fake divorce, where we're going to remain such good friends and everything's wonderful and we're closer than ever and we're going to build even bigger lives separately, but also together a little bit too, but also separately.
It was warm-hearted, a kind of separation, but we'll see. I don't think it's destined for greatness. Neither of these people has a great deal of capacity for friendship. For empathy, for all of the qualities that you would expect a relationship to be built on.
No,
they're both transactional at their core.
But what's so interesting is watching that. I mean, the irony wasn't lost on me when at one point Elon at this press conference at the White House yesterday looks around the room and he says, "This, you have made this Oval Office majestic, Mr. President.
Majestic.
And you.
Majesty. Your majesty."
And the gold. And they talk about the 24 karat gold on the ceiling as they are talking about waste, well,
to save
fraud,
money.
And abuse.
It is extraordinary.
Mean, it's almost cartoonish.
And
it's sort of
disgusting. Also, did you notice that when Elon is talking about the government people, the government contractors and all of the, he carefully avoided saying that the Defense Department is completely dependent on Elon Musk's Starlink and also his Starship and all of the things that he's doing. You know, Elon has created an entire city in Texas that the Defense Department promotes and subsidizes. No, there was none of that.
No, it's all, you know, bean counters, bureaucrats. You know, they paint this picture of inefficiency in a corner with paper and adding machines.
Well, bureaucrats have been the scapegoats for presidents, for the public.
And the backbone, by the way.
Well, I've worked with them. I've worked with hundreds, if not thousands, of public servants, people who could have done much better financially in the private sector in terms of their education levels. But, you know, they came to the government because they wanted to make a difference. And for them to be demeaned and kind of talked down to and talked as if they accomplish nothing and they are purposeless by the richest man in the world and the president of the United States, who doesn't even understand the Constitution, I was kind of disgusting, frankly. They are both of these individuals will go down in history. I predict, if history is recording accurately, as people who were traitors to America, traitors to the ideal of America.
For sure. And just watching even how they interacted with the press. It's gone. It's so far gone.
Well, it's not gone. I mean, I think that the ideals are still there. We still remember how these institutions should work. And
that one quote that Russell Vogt said months ago, but it was found out by ProPublica, where he talked about wanting to cause trauma to federal employees.
And Russell Vogt, remember, was the OMB, Office of Management and Budget Director, in the first Trump administration. It is now there in the second Trump administration, is rumored to be taking over all of the DOGE responsibilities that Elon Musk has left.
Also Project 2025.
And he was the author of Project 2025. Russell Vogt is an anti-democracy leader. That is, he really wants America, apparently. I mean, I haven't talked to him, but he apparently wants America to be a dictatorship. Everything he has done, everything he wants. I mean, he is in charge of the nativist, nationalistic, sort of xenophobic craze in the White House. He is running the anti-immigrant group with Stephen Miller.
Right.
And the two of them together, Russell Vogt and Stephen Miller, are, to me, now that Elon Musk is leaving, the next centers of power.
And they may not be as overt as Musk and on X as much, but it is worrisome that they're going to step up to the plate even more than they have, right?
Yes, it's worrisome because they are inside players. They know how the system works. And they hold in contempt the system. I mean, government employees, the courts. Stephen Miller, when the trade court, the United States trade court, the three judges on that trade court, two of them Republicans,
yep,
one of them appointed by Trump himself, those three decided, I think justifiably, that the tariff authority should not be exercised by Trump. He had exceeded his authority. You know, the Constitution of the United States that Trump doesn't even know about has in it Article 1, which is Congress's authority. Section 8 of Article 1 says Congress shall be in charge of all of
commerce.
Commerce. But it's international commerce,
right.
Commerce with foreign nations. And Trump has relied, in terms of giving him authority to basically avoid Article 1, Section 8, he has taken authority from a late 1970s statute from Congress that gives him emergency authority in emergency situations.
Yep.
And he's saying, well, it's an emergency. Fentanyl coming across our borders, immigrants coming across our borders. It's all an emergency. And also the trade gap. We have a trade gap, that's an emergency, and therefore I individually, arbitrarily, whenever I want to, can do all of this tariff havoc, which is what he has done. The trade court, the United States trade court, said no, you've exceeded your authority. And what does Miller say? Miller demonizes them. On social media, he says they are treasonous. And then he shows their pictures of the three judges.
I know, he doxed them.
This is what worries me. These people have no understanding and no respect for the Constitution, about the judiciary, the press, the ways in which this country balances the authority of the president.
He also used the word coup.
He said a judicial coup. That's what Stephen Miller said, a judicial coup. Of all people, to talk about coups. You know, this is an administration that Trump actually engineered an attempted coup. Everybody knows. He still denies. Never been held accountable. This is the danger.
So there are ups and downs. Okay, so it was this U.S. trade court. I don't think a lot of us were tracking it before this week.
No, but you know, it's interesting, Heather. This goes back to a theme.
Okay, let's do it.
That is, Trump is bringing us back to first principles. Mm-hmm. He is educating America about what our system really is. How many people knew that there was a trade court? How many people knew or thought about due process or habeas corpus or the rule of law? I mean, we are now educating an entire public and a young generation in what this government requires. What are the building blocks of this government?
That's your silver lining.
And that's my silver lining. Out. That's one of my silver linings, indeed.
But I think it's educating new people are entering this cadre of learners, right? But we need to have it go even further. I think part of the challenge is sparking this and making sure that people use this as a learning moment.
Well, I think that that's what we're trying to do, I hope other people are trying to do it. But on the trade issue, again, most people in this country just didn't pay attention to trade very much. And what Trump is doing in terms of arbitrarily one person deciding that suddenly we're going to put a big, big tariff on all the goods coming into the United States from everywhere, which is a tax that consumers pay. And consumers are beginning to catch on. And as soon as they catch on and the market responds, then Trump pulls back.
Right.
And there is this kind of sense that he is not really going to go through with it. If I were Europe right now and I were negotiating with Trump, even though there is a federal court above the trade court that said we're going to pause this for a while, what would I negotiate? Why would I even negotiate? Why would any country negotiate with Trump when it may be that he doesn't have this authority at all?
So more will be revealed. We've got to see. We're kind of in between, right? The ups and downs here.
But it's also negotiating with an arbitrary authority. I'm old enough to remember NAFTA, the North America Free Trade Act, and the Chinese accession to the World Trade Organization. Now, in retrospect, I think these were big mistakes. And at the time, inside the administration, I was sounding the alarm. But most people assumed that this is not something a president can do on his own.
Right.
I mean, he needs Congress. But Trump has now basically said, I am the king. I am the monarch. I'm in charge of everything.
And the people wanted me to do this. He keeps going back to that. This is my mandate.
And there's no mandate. Nope. He didn't even get a majority of the vote. He got a plurality of the vote. And by a hair's width.
Yeah. The one other thing, it's amazing to see how many exclamation points that Judge Leon, who is, again, conservative as these things go, or at least appointed by, Republicans, these judges are not happy, and it is scary to watch them being, you know, caught in the crosshairs.
Well, if you actually think about it, Heather, if you talk about the Doge and how Doge has been stopped in its tracks, it's been the federal courts. What about, as we just said, we were talking about the tariffs stopped by the courts, the immigrants and basically taking people off the street and sending them to who knows where, I mean, to El Salvador.
Prisons.
To prisons, stopped by the courts. Everywhere you look, law firms and what Trump has wanted to do with law firms, stopped by the courts. The judges who are there, district court judges and court of appeals judges, they are getting enormous amounts of hate mail. They are getting death threats. They are meeting together and trying to summon some protection from the magistrates. I don't want to be alarmist. And here on our little program, I have tried to be optimistic, and I am optimistic over the long term. But when you have judges who are pushing back as they should be pushing back, and almost every one of these cases, Trump is losing or has lost, but those judges are being threatened, and you have Stephen Miller and other top people who are inviting the public to threaten these judges, and Trump himself, who says, you know, the United States having judges who suffer from an ideology that is sick, and he does it with capital letters.
Yep.
And he's talking about judges, some of whom he appointed, many of whom are Republican appointees. This is dangerous.
It's dangerous, but he also, I think when he feels weak and is shown to be weak, I don't know if he ever actually feels weak, but if he senses there's weakness in his peripheral vision, for example, when they pushed him, that reporter pushed him this week about Taco, which is Trump always chickens out, he was livid. So he is in a place right now. He is not happy that people aren't saluting him.
Well, he is most dangerous.
Yeah.
And we know this from the first term, when he's cornered. And when he feels like things are not going well and people are resisting him, and with the courts being the major source of resistance. But even this week, we see a Republican Congress, particularly the Senate, putting up some resistance to his big, beautiful, ugly, horrible bill, which, incidentally, we talked about, the largest, if it's ever passed, the largest redistribution of income in American history from the poor and working class to the rich and ultra-rich.
Reverse Robin Hood.
But the Senate is a little bit angry, a little bit uncertain. A lot of those senators are up for re-election in 2026. So you have Tom Tillis of North Carolina, Susan Collins of Maine. They are sounding very negative about this. They want major changes. This is not going to go through as Trump wanted it. It's not going to go through as the House wanted it. And in fact, it may not go through at all. It may be July or even August until something gels. But remember, even if the Senate approves it, it's got to be again voted on by the House. And the first time the House had a tiny one-person majority for this bill. It's almost impossible.
Good. But I don't want to see what's in the bill that does pass. I mean, how much will be carved out? There's so much that's been shoved into this bill, too, by the way.
Well, there's a basic illogic in the bill. I mean, think of a triangle with three points. One point is, well, a big tax cut. That's what Trump
wants. That's going to take money.
And that's going to take money.
Right.
Another point is, where does the money come from? Well, the biggest source right now is Medicaid, $700 billion out of Medicaid. The other point is the debt. A lot of Republicans don't want to increase the debt. Logically,
how do these?
You can have two of the three, but you cannot have all three. And that's what the Republicans are going through. That's what they went through in the House. That's why it was so hard for them to get anything out of the House. And that's what the Senate, but particularly with all these Senate Republicans up for re-election, they cannot square the circle or the triangle.
Did you see that Representative Mike Flood, there was a viral clip this week where he basically was called out at a town hall talking about what was in the bill. And he said, honestly, I didn't know that that was in the bill. I didn't know.
Yes.
And the contempt. Right.
The contempt issue. And that's a big one because what the Republicans want to do is take away the power of the courts to hold the administration in contempt for disregarding their rulings. And going back to what we were talking about, Stephen Miller and Russell Vogt, they are pushing, along with J.D. Vance, they are pushing for a declaration from Trump that he is not bound by the courts if the courts do something that infringes on his power. And now, obviously,
broadly defined.
But the courts are the ones that determine what his power is.
Right.
And so in a constitutional system and a system of checks and balances, when you have a White House that is saying awful things about these judges and stirring up public resentment and even contemplating the possibility of outright defying the courts, we're in a different world. We are no longer in a world called democracy.
Okay, next. So you have talked about that the economy is contracting. And
yeah.
We've had some numbers, but we've just had a definite number come out from the federal government that it's contracted in the first quarter 0.2%.
Yeah, the Bureau of Economic Analysis in the Commerce Department, and you can still trust these numbers, I believe. I mean, another legacy of Elon Musk is he got into all the data sources. And
it.
A lot of people are worried about him using all that data for his own purposes. And it's a lot of personal data. And a lot of people are worried that he's going to change the data if it's not favorable
or
to Trump.
Delete it.
But at least the Bureau of Economic Analysis so far in the Commerce Department has assuming they're being honest, the economy shrunk by 0.2% in the first quarter. That may not sound like much, but in the last quarter of the last year, it grew 2.4%.
That's it.
And so the shrinkage is actually significant.
You know, and Trump talks about it often. Oh, wait. That doesn't come up. It doesn't come up in the White House events. I mean,
yeah. And if you get two quarters, I mean, it's going to be a big deal. If the second quarter is going to be very important. If you get two quarters in a row where the economy is shrinkage, that's the standard economic definition of a recession.
And
nobody wants to talk about the recession
right.
word. But we also, if those tariffs go into effect, and remember the 10% tariffs are still in effect
right.
on everybody, and the auto tariffs are still in effect because they did not depend on Trump's reading of this emergency tariff authority.
Right.
So there is going to be inflationary pressure. There's already inflationary pressure. Put that inflationary pressure, Heather, together with this contraction, and what do you have? You have ta-da, stagflation, which is the nightmare, everybody's nightmare.
I know. Well, we'll have to see what happens. But it's fascinating to watch him be stymied. I mean, for me this week, I feel like I actually had a little, ooh, look at this in the news.
I did too.
Wow.
Some days this week, I woke up, and this morning was a good example. I thought, by golly, he is being cornered. He's stymied.
Yeah.
It's not that we're turning a corner. It's not that the
right.
tide
Let's not overstate
is necessarily
it. Right.
turning, but we are seeing the system push back.
Right. And his polls are terrible. I mean, his approval ratings are in the teens.
Tanking.
Yeah.
And along with Elon's. I mean, Elon Musk is even worse than
and
Trump.
The YouGov poll said more than 50% of Americans think that the Qataris are bribing Trump through the plane. They disapprove of his working in crypto and benefiting from crypto as he's in charge of regulating crypto. So people are paying attention. So reading the polls is another thing that makes me feel
Yeah, and it's interesting. A lot of what Trump has done in terms of attacking the civil service and attacking the press, and I mean, the average working person in this country shrugs the shoulders. Well, it's too bad. I mean, that's Donald Trump. But when it comes to economics, when it comes to the price of groceries, or it comes to a foreign government bribing him, you know, with a $400 million airplane, or going to a crypto conference and going to a crypto dinner with him just because they are financing him personally, the average American says, wait a minute. I'm doing worse. I'm paying more. Right. And this fellow, you know, who I elected president is pocketing a huge amount of money. And these foreigners are not, you know, are giving him so much money, their foreign governments, not for nothing. They want something. Right. They think they're going to get something. What are they getting? What are they taking from me?
Right.
People are beginning to ask those questions, Heather.
That's it. And we know that people are so influenced by their own economic experience. I mean, really how they're feeling. And so for them to be an us, to be able to connect with what is actually happening at the federal level and feeling it, I mean, I think that is an improvement. I mean, it's an opportunity for education. We said that earlier, but
It's so important. Undoubtedly. And it started, let's take Elon, for example. His downfall starts when Doge begins to attack Social Security. They find waste, fraud, and abuse. It's not waste, fraud, and abuse. It's Social Security offices that are actually providing services to Social Security recipients. There are a lot of them because there need to be, and there are a lot of Social Security right. recipients. But when Doge goes in and starts taking those people away, firing those Social Security workers, a lot of people, and I can tell you, because I'm one of the Social Security recipients, you know, you can't reach the Social Security offices. People begin to see there is a connection between this abstract called government mm-hmm. and their daily lives.
Yeah.
It's true of veterans, too. A Veterans Administration, when Elon Musk and his Doge start attacking that, a lot of veterans felt it.
Right.
Felt it. They felt the reverberations. And it's true now when prices are starting to go up because of everything Trump is doing, because of the tariffs, people feel it.
They feel it, but also then all of the, you know, healthcare support, and for veterans in particular, the mental health support, all this other stuff is being cut at the same time. So I think people are feeling it.
And Medicaid. Now, yeah. again, go back to my triangle. They haven't actually attacked Medicaid directly, but in the budget.
Oh, yeah.
It's there. I mean, a $700 billion cut in Medicaid to finance this big tax cut, mostly for the very wealthy. All over America, living rooms, kitchens, all over America, people are saying, this is not right.
You just attended the May 31st, 2025 Coffee Clutch with Robert Reich and Heather Lofthaus. The full version is 38 minutes long, and you can find it for free on YouTube under the title Muskrat Abandons Ship, The Coffee Clutch with Robert Reich. He's a professor, author, lawyer, and political commentator, and worked in the administrations of Presidents Ford and Carter, and as Secretary of Labor for President Clinton. His co-host, Heather Lofthaus, is Executive Director of Inequality Media, Civic Action. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.